Think about this for a moment, Alina. A study covering 19 countries found that certain institutional arrangements more consistently produced policymakers whose positions matched citizens' preferences than others. Not better leaders, not smarter voters, different rules. That single finding cuts to the heart of political science. The architecture of the game shapes the outcome more reliably than the quality of the players. Power, it turns out, is not a personal possession. It is a structured relationship, defined by rules that determine who can make decisions, how those decisions get checked, and whose preferences actually count. Here is the key idea. Political institutions are the formal rules that prescribe or prohibit actions by citizens, candidates, and office holders, with real sanctions attached to violations. Think of them less like a referee's whistle and more like the dimensions of the playing field itself. A football match played on a pitch half the normal width produces a completely different game, even with identical athletes. Institutions work the same way. They shape outcomes indirectly by changing the incentives and constraints facing every political actor. They do not mechanically determine results. They tilt the terrain. And that tilt, compounded across millions of decisions, produces the political world we actually live in. Now, the mechanics get specific fast, and this is where it gets interesting for you, Alina. Electoral rules determine how voters' preferences are translated into votes, then into legislative seats, then into governing power. Single-member district systems, the kind used in the UK and the US, tend to limit the number of viable parties and make it easier for one party to form a majority government. Proportional representation systems generally create more opportunities for multiple parties to gain legislative representation. Neither is simply better. Each creates a different incentive structure. Parliamentary systems can encourage party cohesion because the government's survival depends on maintaining legislative support. Majoritarian institutions give election winners greater capacity to implement a clear program, but they may leave substantial groups with far less influence over decisions. The takeaway is that every electoral design is a choice about who gets amplified and who gets muted. Here is where the incentive logic turns genuinely uncomfortable. Concentrating political power in the election winner creates a real trade-off. It can make a voter's preferred candidate more effective once in office. But it also makes it harder for voters to identify high-quality candidates before the election. Higher electoral stakes actually increase candidates' incentives to imitate attractive policy positions without possessing comparable ability or genuine public-spiritedness. For example, when the prize of winning is enormous, control of budgets, appointments, regulatory power, even a mediocre or self-interested candidate has every reason to perform competence rather than demonstrate it. The optimal degree of power concentration, research suggests, depends partly on the conflict of interest between voters and candidates. And here is the deeper problem. Institutions are influenced by the distribution of power, which means they can reproduce the interests of those who designed them. Unequal political power is often associated with economic institutions that distribute benefits narrowly. Changing formal political rules does not necessarily eliminate entrenched power, because affected elites may invest in informal or de facto power to preserve their influence. A democracy can remain formally democratic, while economic institutions continue to favor an elite when de facto power offsets changes in formal political rules. Remember that distinction, formal versus de facto power, because it explains why so many well-designed constitutions produce disappointing results on the ground. The architecture of ambition, then, is never just about the ambitions of individuals. Political power is not simply possessed by leaders. It is structured by rules that determine who can make decisions, how decisions are checked, and whose preferences count. Institutions that constrain arbitrary official action and hold politicians accountable can reduce opportunities and incentives for corruption. Institutional arrangements that share power with opposition parties can encourage bargaining and give minorities greater influence over policymaking. But none of this is automatic. The rules interact with socioeconomic conditions and accumulated experience with democracy in ways that can moderate or even overwhelm the intended effects. So the real lesson, Alina, is this. If you want to understand why a political system produces the outcomes it does, stop looking first at the leaders and start looking at the rules they operate inside. The rules are the power. Everything else is performance within a structure someone else designed.